Have you been paying attention at all to this migration of these Asian carp that are coming up from, well, Asia through central Illinois and hopefully not into the Great Lakes? And all of the Great Lakes states are cognizant of it, and they're diligently trying to keep these fish from swimming upstream. And boy, if they get into Lake Michigan, if they get into Lake Superior, if they populate there, I think life will be different for a lot of people and certainly for a lot of fish. And they have, as I understand it, this electric grid that the fish are not supposed to be getting past. But there was a story last week that one rogue carp did, thinking, okay, that's a fish I want to shake his hand. A fish that can swim upstream and get past an electric grid is a fish on a mission. But I don't know exactly how this works. So we called somebody who does, and that's Charlie Woolley, who is the Midwest Deputy Regional Director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And he joins us now on WGN Radio. Hey, Charlie, it's John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm wonderful, John. Good afternoon to you and all of your listeners.
Is that a fair assessment? I mean, these fish are swimming upstream, and they are not populous in, or at all in Lake Michigan, are they?
That's correct, John. To date, we have not seen any big or silver carp in Lake Michigan. And we want to keep it that way. And your reference to the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier is related to a June 22nd finding that a contract commercial fisherman hired by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources captured a silver carp right below the T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam, which is about 8 miles south of Lake Michigan. So this is a little concerning and perplexing to all of us. This is about 40 miles upstream of the most recent survey location where we've seen Asian carp in the Illinois waterway system. We're not sure if it swam through the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier or how it got to this location by the T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam, but we're trying to figure that out right now.
What's the deal with these fish? Why do we not like them?
Oh, we're very, very concerned, John, that if they get into the Great Lakes, they would outcompete our native fish and our important commercial fish. They are just voracious eaters. They compete with our native fish for food. Most of our native fish eat plankton during the early part of their life cycle, and that's the same food that the Asian carp are eating throughout their whole life cycle. So we really want to keep them out of the Great Lakes because we know they'll have a devastating impact on the fisheries there.
You know, I don't even think of the Great Lakes anymore as fisheries. I think of them as, you know, I'm at the beach. I see people sailing and swimming and sunning and motorboating. Is that a big deal, the commercial fishing of the Great Lakes?
Both commercial and sport fishing, John. In the Great Lakes on the U.S. side, it's about a $7 billion industry. So when you go from Lake Superior all the way down to Lake Ontario, a lot of people make their living through either providing charter boat operations or commercial fishermen in the Great Lakes today.
I'm glad to hear that the lakes are that healthy. I mean, so they support vast numbers of fish, and it's a $1 billion fishing industry, huh?
That is correct, a $7 billion fishing industry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a remarkable resource. It has come back really from the brinks of some hard times in the late 50s and 60s with water pollution. The states, the federal government have all done their share of helping clean up the Great Lakes, and they're a remarkable natural resource that we should all be very proud of.
Why do I call them Asian carp? You called it silver carp. Are there more than one kind of fish here?
Yes, you're right. Asian carp is a reference term that we use for silver and bighead carp that are found in the Illinois waterway system. It's the silver carp that was found close to Lake Michigan on June 22nd, though, that has captured everybody's imagination and is the source of our conversation here today.
Were they originally from Asia? Why are they in central Illinois?
Yes, they are originally from Asia. And in the 50s and 60s, they were brought into ponds down in the southern part of the United States to help control algae in catfish ponds, aquaculture ponds. And also they were helping improve water quality in sewage treatment ponds down south. There were a number of floods in the 60s. They inadvertently got into the lower Mississippi River. And since the late 60s, early 70s, they've been slowly working their way north towards the Great Lakes. And they're about 40 or 50 miles south of the Great Lakes right now in what's known as the Dresden Island-Brandon Road area.
So what? How do you describe this electrical grid? That, I mean, it seems crazy that you'd have, if you wouldn't have electricity and water. And boy, if I were a fish, I would sure swim away from that. What are we talking about here?
That's correct, John. The United States Army Corps of Engineers operates this very sophisticated electrical barrier down in Romeoville, Illinois. It's a series of grids, exactly the way you described it, underwater, that pulses electricity at various strengths to keep fish from moving upstream towards Lake Michigan. The Army Corps of Engineers has spent years perfecting this. It has backup systems associated with it. They're actually in the process of putting in another additional system at Romeoville as we speak right now. And it's built to keep bighead and silver and other species of Asian carp from moving up the Illinois waterway system.
Well, if I were swimming there or skiing near there, how far out does the shock pulse go? Would it affect me?
No, it's contained within a lock-type system down there. And the Army Corps of Engineers has worked very closely with the barge industry and the Coast Guard to have specific regulations in place there so that when a boat or a barge transits that area, there are certain speeds, certain conditions, and certain ways that that boat has to move through so that nobody's injured inadvertently by the electricity, yet the electricity still is functioning to keep carp out.
And does it just, like a electric fence for your dog, pulse and it's painful and they go away, or does it kill them?
It's a deterrent. It shocks them and moves them away, just like an electrical fence does for your dog.
How about that?
Yeah, right.
But then we got one of them that's on the other side. Now, I suppose I could have caught one, put it in a cooler of water, and just walked it across, put it in my car, and driven it on the other side, right?
Yeah, that's stranger things have happened. It's always a possibility. That's why this is such a perplexing issue for us, and it's got a certain sense of scientific mystery associated with it. But one thing we are doing, John, is with this 8-pound silver carp that we captured, we're getting some gene sequencing work done with the fish. We're looking very closely at the genetics. We're doing some microchemistry work with the fish. So we're going to study this fish and see if we can understand exactly where it's been, the life cycle of this fish, and answer some of these questions.
These are the ones, though, that videos popped up a few years ago where they were so numerous when water skiers or motorboats go up and down the Illinois River down by Peoria, say, at Lake Peoria. They jump, and you can shoot them with a bow and arrow.
That is correct. Those are the silver carp. They get agitated by boat motors and the pulsating that comes from a boat motor, and it's a real problem down, as you mentioned, down in the Peoria pool. And we wouldn't want to see anything like that continue north and get into the Great Lakes and some of our harbors, you know, downtown Chicago, where you have all this great boating and recreation that's occurring there, to have silver carp jumping up and hitting people in the head and knocking people out of boats and injuring them would be just horrible.
Yeah, you know, that sounds like a crazy concern or fear, but literally Google silver or Asian carp Peoria. And you just can't believe it. And these things, they're like 3-4 foot long. What do those suckers weigh?
Yeah, they can get up to 30, 40, 50 pounds. They're just flying little missiles.
Yeah, that's what it is. You can't believe it.
Yeah, this absolutely.
Missile absolutely. Just shoots out of the water. Okay, but on a phone line, Charlie, we've got a couple of listeners who have not only questions but theories about how they got past that electric grid. Because I got to tell you, if I'm swimming upstream and say I'm a fish, and there's electricity this way and not electricity that way, I'm going to go that way. What compels the fish to go forward? How does that happen? Okay, a couple theories about that. You have a question, 2312-981-7200 on WGN. I'm John Williams. I don't fish much, although a friend of mine sent me a picture of me with a fish that I caught last year. That is one unlucky fish, but thank you for that. But I know a lot of you are into angling, and as our guest said a moment ago, even if you're not, if the idea that you would be water skiing or zipping up and down Lake Michigan meant that Asian carp would be jumping up and going after you, well, now suddenly you do care or are interested. You know what we need to do, Charlie, though? Charlie Woolley's on the phone line. He's the Midwest Deputy Regional Director with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We need to develop an appetite for these things. I mean, maybe what if everybody saw those things as walleye or fillets, you know?
Right. That has been tried, John, in a number of locations in the Midwest. And there's a limited market for bighead and silver carp right now. I know that there have been some entrepreneurs that have been trying to expand that market, but that's a possibility, and certainly people are working at that right now.
And even if we all did love Asian carp or found a, you know, reason to eat them, the way you put it, they eat the plankton that the other fish eat, and they eat it their whole life, so it would just kill off the walleye or whatever else we got in Lake Michigan, right?
That is correct. That's the biggest concern that we have, John, is that the Asian carp get in and they just start to outcompete the native fish that we have. There are no known predators for Asian carp here in the United States, and it would just be a shame to see anything happen in the Great Lakes. And really what they've done is they've left a trail of destruction as they've moved up the Mississippi River. We know that that's what would happen in the Great Lakes, and we just want to avoid that at all costs.
Well, you know, you hate to see us mess with nature. You go, I got a good idea. Let's introduce a species that's not native to an area. I think milfoil was brought into parts of this country with good intentions, and look what milfoil does, you know?
Yes, milfoil. You can look at house sparrows, a number of species like that. You just want to respect Mother Nature and not necessarily try to mess with her.
Jimmy had an observation, though. Hey, Jimmy, this is John, and you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
My question is this. When the Asian carp spawn and they lay their eggs,
yeah,
can those eggs become attached to the feathers of ducks or other waterfowl? The ducks fly upstream 4 or 6 miles, go back in the water, and with those eggs detached, and then the carp will be born.
How about
that
one?
That's the only question.
Yes, great, great question. We spent about 3 years ago field season looking at that and found that they just will not attach. There isn't anything sticky enough on an Asian carp egg for it to attach to a duck or a heron or anything like that to move it upstream. But we thought that was a possibility. We spent a lot of money looking into it. Just doesn't seem like it's practical, so probably not a threat to us right now.
Really interesting question, Jimmy. I like your thinking out of the box there. How many fish would you need to get upstream? Like maybe one or two do, but you need how many for it to actually become a viable population?
John, we figure that you would probably need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fish to get upstream to turn into a viable population, because you'd have to have a number of different generations for a fish like this to become established in an area. So it would take a while, but if we don't do anything to control these fish moving north, it's certainly a possibility.
Al, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking the call. I know from the history of the Midwest that we have been very successful in wiping out many different species of fish, fowl, other types of wildlife. So how come we can't be successful in wiping these guys out?
Yeah, right. Yeah, somewhere there's a passenger pigeon going, really? You're kidding me. You can't kill these things? Hello?
Well, the Illinois DNR is really doing a great job right now with contract commercial fishermen. So fishermen that are used to catching these kind of fish in big river systems, the state is paying them right now to go out and fish these numbers down, particularly down in the Marcellus Pool and the Dresden Island Pool, the south of Chicago. So we are looking at experts like the commercial fishermen, getting them on our side, contracting with them to go out and remove millions and millions of pounds of these fish. And I think that's going to help, but it'll be one tool in our toolbox.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. Hey, John, this texter says, we moored our boat at Starved Rock Marina, and these carp would jump with such force out of the water, they would knock people off their wave runners. They would even land on the docks. Hey, John, why can't we catch it and use it for cheap bait around the world, just round them up? But I suppose your point about that would be that we just would never be able to keep up, right? In the meantime, they'd be wreaking havoc on other species.
That's correct. We probably don't want to take our problem and send it to another place in the world and make it their problem. So we're very careful about not doing that. So what we want to do, though, is long-term, John, what we're going to have to do is find a chemical control that will be able to kill just silver and bighead carp, nothing else. We're looking at a potential enzyme that's in their stomach that would activate a chemical that they would ingest that would just kill those fish. So that's a possibility out there on the horizon. And that would be a huge tool to help us control these fish if we get there.
A lot of people are calling in with ideas about how to use the fish, turn them into cat food, feed poor people, whatever. But all of that I'm hearing you say is beside the point. Tom has the last question that I want to get to, and then we'll let you go. We're out of time. Tom, you're on WGN. Hi.
Yeah, why not an electric shock that just gets rid of the Asian carp, just kills them?
Yeah, why are we trying to deter them? Let's zap them for good there, Charlie.
Well, we do with the contract commercial fishing that I just referenced and some of the other work that we do. We do get those fish, kill them, pull them out of the Illinois waterway system, put them in landfills, turn them into fertilizer, cat food, et cetera.
Yeah, so but no, down in Romeoville. In Romeoville, you know, where you've got this electric grid, just took that thing on 11. Boom.
Sure, sure. Right now, the good thing about Romeoville is that the leading edge of Asian carp is still about 30 miles, 40 miles south of the Romeoville barrier. So it's not like we have Asian carp constantly penetrating that barrier, trying to get through. They're still ways down. It's at one or two
so rope. You can do that if you need to.
Yes, if it's possible, but we want to keep these fish far downstream, hence the work with the contract commercial fishermen to thin them down.
And by the way, what about the other fish coming through? They're not crazy about it either, right?
And no, that's the unfortunate thing is that we do have native fish. I know that Illinois DNR would love to see moving through there. Smallmouth bass, walleye are a great example.
Yeah.
Yes.
Out of time. Charlie, well, let's visit again. You know, we'll follow this story and hopefully continue to report good news. Good luck to you all on this, all right?
Thank you, John, and thanks to your listeners for their interest.
Yeah, Charlie Woolley is the Midwest Deputy Regional Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.